Okay, good morning. Sorry for the delay. Today I continue a discussion about some non-perturbative or semi-perturbative aspects of renormalization group and trying to make the connection between, to explain a bit more explicitly the connection between the Wilsonian point of view and the perturbative point of view, I hope. Okay, so remember what we did last time on Monday. We started from we used a method which is called the effect local potential approximation, which is a mixture of so it's an approximation. So it's basically a one loop calculation with some approximation of the term we keep on the Wilsonian procedure, but we still keep a lot of them. It's not perturbative with just a FIFO theory. So we started from a model where we have a scalar field and we have an action, Euclidean, which is a dimension space. We have the usual derivative terms. And then we have a general potential, P of phi, but we are going to keep the form of this Hamiltonian. So the only parameter which can be changed during the renormalization flow, group flow procedure is the shape of the potential. Okay, and we use the fact that the potential is, we take a general potential of the form sum over some k of some coupling, some parameters, gk normalized by factorial k and phi to the power k. And so we apply this procedure and we get a renormalization group flow when we start from a theory which is a bare theory with a high momentum cutoff, sharp cutoff k less or equal to lambda, and we integrate over from the k less to lambda to lambda divided by some scaling parameter, by slice. So we get a renormalization group flow equation for the function v of I. So we start from an initial function, and we get an effective or renormalized potential vs of phi. Okay, and I wrote the equation, but I just wanted to make precise that since we are renormalizing, we express everything in terms of dimensionless quantity because we want to compare things at different scales. So we cannot compare something which is measured in microns to something which is measured in meters. So here, in the bare theory at scale lambda, the scale, the natural scale, is a cutoff, and therefore we defined. In fact, a dimensionless quantity, by expressing x as some minus one x bars, where this, which I denote x bar, is just dimensionless. So the corresponding momentum are k equal lambda k bar. And then what you do is that you have to change phi into lambda d minus 2. Divided by 2 some dimensionless field phi bar. And you have to change the potential into lambda to the power d v bar. So that each of these terms, when you integrate, is dimensionless. And this means that if you write v as such a potential, the g has changed into dimensionless couplings g bar k, that we can write implicitly as dk is lambda d minus k plus k 2 minus d divided by 2 g bar k, where all the bars quantities is bars. And re-express everything. And so in that case, the renormalization group flow equation, in fact, will be a renormalization on V bar as a function of phi bar. And as you perform your normalization group, you rescale everything so that you always deal with normalization group with dimensionless quantity. And the final equation we had was within this approximation was a functional equation involving both the derivative of the potential with respect to the field phi and its derivative with respect to S. And the equation was, if I made no mistakes, so renormalization groups tells you how under a change of scale, the potential V S evolves for a given value of phi. And what you get is just D V S minus D minus 2 over 2 phi D V prime S of phi, where prime means the derivative with respect to phi. V prime is dV over d phi, et cetera. Okay, so those are just linear terms in the potential, which come from just the dimensional analysis. So those are classical mean field, if you want, in the language of statistical mechanics. And then when you take into account the quantum correction or the fluctuation correction at one loop, that's the approximation, you get the important additional term where you get some constant C, which depends on the dimension, and then you get the logarithm of 1 plus the second derivative of the potential at a given S. Okay, so that's a non-linear term. It's a log, it comes from the trace log of the determinant of the fluctuation. That's why there is a log. And there is a 1 here because this in momentum space is k squared, and we are integrating over a slice of momenta where k is normalized to 1 by this normalization. Okay. And C is some constant which depends on the dimension. So, but that's not very important, but C is depends on dimension. But what you see here is that the dimension plays a role, so of course. So in 4 dimensions for the quantum field theory, we are interested in equal 4, but for statistical mechanics, we're interested in V less than 4. Okay. So now that's what we where we were at the end of last lecture. And of course, you can study this equation either analytic or numerically. That's interesting. So you get a flow in functions. So it's a flow equation. That's a flow equation. But a natural approximation and useful is to truncate. So keep only the powers of A. Phi to the power of some k up to so k less or equal to some k max. That's an approximation. Okay. And it turns out that what one does in usual normalization group theory is go to from k equal 2 simply, but you can go further for k equal 4. I'm sorry. And so now I am going to discuss a bit qualitatively what's the result of the calculation. So the result of the calculation. So I'm going to consider a potential where k is even. So I'm considering k even. So that's useful to study the phenomenon of whether there is a symmetry breaking or not, or several patterns of symmetry breaking. So for instance, Ising. And so I use different notation, but it might be useful to write this just. So let's first take k max. So I'm going to write things up to k equals 3. K max equals 6. I'm keeping only the term phi squared, phi 4, and phi 6. And then you have 3 couplings, g2, g4, and g6, and in my notes, this one is denoted T because that's the analog of the reduced temperature when you do study the Ising model. G4 is the usual coupling constant for phi 4, and G6 is a phi 6 coupling, so it's denoted H. So that's mass squared, mass term. This is phi 4, and this is phi 6. Additional term, which is useful to study. First, whether this is stable, and second, it's useful to study tricritical phenomena, phenomena where a system may be in three different ground state or vacuum states. Okay, so then, so out of this equation, of course, you get a flow in the space of those couplings. So instead of writing this, you can write S. You can write an equation. This, instead of an equation of the Vs, you can write an equation for the renormalized parameter. So you get a renormalized parameter, GK of S. And you can write how this equation translates into how GK of S evolves with S, the scaling parameter. And this is, of course, some function, a given function for each potential you have WK, which is a function of all the G, so all the G of S, not only one. So it's a, so in some sense, those are the component of a vector flow. So this equation gives a vector flow, in the space of couplings. At each point in the space of coupling, you have some vector and you evolve according to this vector. Yes.
But what you mean from the right hand side is that, say, G will also depend on B and H.
Yeah, so I'm going to justify this. So W, so for instance, if you compute W of 2, you find that it is 2 T. Well, let me write it like T. Plus G minus TG. That's how you get with this approximation. So H doesn't play a role. It is going to appear later. Then for the function W4, you get H. Well, let me write this like that rather. You get there should be a okay, I'm writing this in D equal 4. That's why the formula for D equal different from 4. I'm not in this, in the notes. I'm sorry. I'm not in the notes, but so you start with a factor minus 3 g squared, and then you get factor involving h and t, plus h minus th. Okay. And W6 is minus 2H minus 15GH. That's for D equal 4. Okay. And well, in fact, I should have the formula or general H, but I'm just going to write them qualitatively. Sorry, I didn't pay attention. No, not even. I have some more lecture notes in French or a book by road, but okay, so that's not important. Okay, anyway, let me describe what it is, this. And so you see, if you forget about H and the third order, you get only this. Okay, so if that's what I get if I take K max equal to. Okay. And in fact, if d is not equal to 4,
you mean k max equals 4?
Pardon?
You mean k max equals 4 in there?
K max equals 4, yes, I'm sorry. Yes. The term of order 2 in phi squared. Okay. And for if d equals 4, in fact, is different from 4, what you get is, I think, nothing much different from this. But W4 is four minus D G minus 3 G squared. That's the important fact. And basically W2 is still 2T plus G or less. Okay, and that's when setting C equal 1. Otherwise, you have some complicated factor of C, but they are not important. Okay. And this term is not very important. Okay. So you see the following things. Now, if you integrate this function, you get the following renormalization group flow. Now you have a coupling. So I have a coupling, and I have this feature. Here I have the coupling T, which is just the phi squared coupling. And here I have the coupling G, which is the phi. So it's associated to phi squared, and this is associated to phi 4. Okay. So if you keep, so if I'm considering only that, you see that G, better to consider it positive, otherwise the potential is the unbounded from below. But if you had phi 6, then you can go to G negative. And this, but this can be positive or negative as long as G is positive. Okay. And what you get is the following renormalization picture. Well, you can check that you have flows that if D is less than 4, has the following feature. There is a critical point here where this vanishes. You see, you have a G critical, which is where this vanishes. So where G equal 4 minus D divided by 3, something like that. Okay. Where W doesn't evolve. But now W2 change with T. And you see that in order for W2 to vanish, G has to be negative, or T, if you want that to be minus T. So you have somewhere this point, which is where T star is minus 1/2 of G star. You have, of course, a fixed point where the S doesn't evolve, which is when the coupling are zero. And the way this vary with S goes in this way. And then maybe I should keep some colors. So you see that if you are here, you stay there. And in fact, when you, this is how this changes. Here, if you set G equals 0, you see that T evolves by S over S of T is 2T. So this scales like that. And there is another interesting line which flows there, where you flow from this trivial fixed point, 0, 0, to this non-trivial fixed point star here. This is a trivial fixed point. You get G0 equals 0, T0 equals 0, which is a trivial fixed point. Okay, and nothing special happens here, you see. Okay, and the renormalization group flow, if you are away from that, goes in this direction. You go like that. If you are to the right, to the left of this line, this. And if you are the left, you go this way. Okay, so that's the picture if D is less than 4. So keep this picture in mind. So this fixed point, in fact, is a Wilson-Fisher fixed point that I presume you have seen in StatMec. While in at D equal 4, you see that this fixed point, you know, it's at 4 minus D, so it merges with 0. So at D equal 4, you get something different. You still have the trivial fixed point, but it's because the non-trivial fixed point merges with 0. You still have some lines that flow away. And here you have this. And the flow now are, you see, you are going that way. You are attracted. Sorry. And so the flow are like this. Okay, so this is a picture. And if you go to higher dimension, if you include this higher dimensional couplings, appears is that in fact these lines becomes a plane, and you are attracted. So in fact, in this direction, what happens is that you have here Wilson Fisher fixed point, I should have represented it in the other way, in the other direction, because it's a plane which is like that. So I represent this as a plane like that. Here you have the Wilson Fisher fixed point, and here you have the line. Is this this line? And here you have the trivial fixed point. Zero star. And now the flows are such that on this surface, this is a surface where you're attracted. What's the Wilson fixed point? That's called the attractive surface. And here you have some repulsive direction everywhere. You flow away. So this Wilson fixed point here has two very important features. It has the attractive surface that I draw like that. And it has this 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 repulsive line. Okay. And if you do the analysis with 3 couplings, 4 couplings, 6 couplings, etc., this repulsive line is always one dimensional. So it's a real line in the space of coupling. While the attractive surface, if you have K max coupling, it's K max dimensional. It's K minus 1 dimensional. So this is a line, and this is a an hypersurface. Surface with co-dimension one is the space of Poulenc. And so that's the surface which locally at is separate the space of Poulenc into two subdomains. Okay, so that's a picture that you have seen, I think, in this statistical physics, in the core course of statistical physics. So it's just nothing new from that point of view. And then you have this Gaussian fixed point, so that's the Wilson-Fischer fixed point, star. And you have the trivial fixed point. And in the trivial fixed point, you see that's a bit different because you have one direction line. Here, you have one repulsive line. But you have another repulsive line, which is this one. Where you go there. So the for O, so this is for Wilson fixed point, and for the trivial or Gaussian fixed point, 0, then the repulsive direction, there are two directions, two. You have two, you have a repulsive surface with dimension 2. And so it is this plane, and the attractive surface is this one. The attractive surface has dimension k max minus 2. Okay, so that's okay. The Gaussian fixed point and the non-trivial fixed point are very different. Now, this is in D less than 4. And in D equal 4, well, this merge to this. So you have only one fixed point with one repulsive direction. And all the other ones are attractive. Okay, so that's a picture, which is a standard picture of Wilson. So now let's think about this picture from the point of view of a quantum field theorist. A quantum field theory. What we want to do is to construct a theory with a possibly phi 4, phi 6 terms. So we want a theory with a phi squared, phi 4, phi 6 interaction terms, possibly terms involving higher derivative. But we want a theory which makes sense when we have performed, renormalization group transformation up to a scale k equal mu, which is lambda divided by S. Remember the picture I drew yesterday. We start from a theory with we have a bare theory at scale lambda. This is the top. But we have a theory that which makes sense at mu, at a given physical scale, which is way, way smaller than the cutoff, because in fact, this cutoff we want, it's just an intermediate integration, either it's some very high physical energies, much higher. So basically, we want to get rid of that. We want to see does the physics doesn't depend on lambda if we keep things fixed well. And you see that in this picture, basically, let's come back to this picture, you see, where I just have the phi 4 coupling and the phi squared coupling, but it can be extended to taking into account. I have this picture in picture, so let me just draw it again because there are a lot. So I have this feature, I have this grouping, and I have this 6-point star. And this is G, and this is T. And I have this flow. Okay. You see that, and here I have this flow. My question is, which coupling, which G at scale lambda gives some renormalized coupling GS of order one? Because the renormalized couplings are the couplings related to the describe the effective physics at scales mu less or equal to S. And since we are dealing with dimensionless numbers, dimensionless parameter, this means that we want to have a parameter of the series that we are related to physical observable of the series at a scale mu, which are of order mu with the correct scaling dimension. Okay, so we want the GS to be finite. And the question is which G original allows to do that. That's a program of renormalization viewed from the point of view of a quantum field theorist. Can I adjust the bare coupling, the original coupling in my action? Eh? So that I get a fine renormalized parameter over the one. Okay, so you see that what's going on? If you want to do that, start from the parameter here. You know how the renormalization group parameter are here. Let's see, they flow like that. So if you want to have something final at a scale mu, which is finite, this is GS here for this S. Well, you had to come for something which has coming like that, so which has very close to there. You see? So you see that, and if you were there, then you have to start from a bare coupling which is close to there.
Okay. What are we doing with GS?
We want to have GS finite, and we want to adjust. So in order to have to GS finite, you have to start from a point which is very close to this fixed point, because otherwise it goes away, and GS is very large. So I'm reversing the process. You see, I looked at starting from a fixed point, starting from some renormalized coupling which is finite. How could I have started to go there? You see, and in order to you realize that by this just this graphical picture. With G, at scale lambda. For GS finite, at scale mu, with mu related to lambda by this factor, from which start at scale lambda should we start? See. And you see, for instance, on this example, that we can do that only if this G at scale lambda, this is possible. If G, the original G, is on the
On the surface, which is on the unstable, or a fixed point. See, it has to be there if we want to end up on this direction. It has to be along this line if you want to end up on this direction. Okay. You see, and this tells you, this is just some picture, that in fact, in order to get a quantum V theory, you need to have your bare coupling on the unstable surface of a fixed point, so that the renormalized coupling stays at a finite distance for this fixed point. And therefore, this means that in general, to construct a continuum quantum field theory, you need a fixed point, trivial or non-trivial, with, and so this fixed point has a finite number of unstable directions. Okay. And so that, and you adjust the bare coupling if you want, the bare coupling, the bare coupling at scale lambda. At scale lambda, you have to adjust them, you have to adjust them, so that when lambda goes to infinity, they become close to the fixed point. So that the renormalized coupling, GS at scale mu, are somewhere on the unstable surface. See. So this means that in order to construct a continuum field theory by taking lambda goes to zero, if the continuum limit exists, it's labeled by just a finite number of parameters, which are going to be the parameter of the quantum field theory.
So,
yes.
How do you define the unstable surface?
You define the unstable surface because you have some. You can define it by just looking at the equation from the flow. You see, you in general, you have a finite and infinite dimension here. So, let's go back to that. You have a fixed point. Maybe I can So you have an equation of flow which tells you that S ds over ds of the couplings of ds equal W of G. But that's a very so this is now a vector. This is that's a multidimensional vector. This is a vector, and this is a G. So G is G2, G4, G6, etc. So it's a vector here, and W is W1, well, W2, W4, W6, etc. Okay. So if you have a fixed point, it means that you have a fixed point, D is such that all the are zero. So you have a fixed point in your space of coupling. Now, since it's zero, you can linearize the coupling. You can write that if G is G fixed point plus some delta G, it's a fixed point. Those are vectors. You see? You can write that W of G linearize. It's zero of first order. Okay, and then it's a matrix. It's a derivative matrix. Let's call it
W prime, and that's a matrix, sum G. And W prime is a matrix, plus some higher order terms. Okay, so, well, in a well-behaved theory, this matrix, that's a Jacobian matrix of the field vector. You can diagonalize it. It can be right. And so it has eigenvectors and eigenvalues.
It should be written.
Yeah, it's just the prime is so yeah, so you can write this. Okay, you can write this as W K of G equal W prime K L. That depends on the fixed points times delta G. I'm sorry, that's delta G. I'm sorry, that's delta G L plus higher order terms. So you diagonalize this matrix. And you look for its negative eigenvectors. They correspond to the unstable direction, and the positive eigenvectors correspond to the so that those are the repulsive, and this are the, those are the attractive direction. And so, in this picture, you see here you have just have direction here and the direction in. And if you are just starting from this direction, you can integrate the flow. This defines the surface, because if you had made a small error in this direction, since the other direction are attractive, you will be attracted very quickly to the surface. So that's a mathematical way to define the unstable surface. You start just from in the negative direction, start from the repulsive direction, and integrate the flow. It defines the surface with as many dimensions as you have unstable eigenvectors. So that's a mathematical way to define that. Well, of course, you have to assume that the vector flow is well behaved and there are no singularities. Of course, you can have a lot of palatable behavior, but in actual cases for simple theory, this is well behaved. Okay, so did I?
So then, for example, for the and for the one of these, the black ones, and for the Gaussian fixed point, they are stable.
Yeah, for the Gaussian fixed point, if you are less than inclination, you have two unstable directions.
Yeah.
The other one are stable. So here, of course, I'm in two dimensions, so it's a wool plane, or at least this band of the wool point. But if you were in three dimensions, then that's the thing that we try to draw there. Then I would have, it would be, where is my blue? My blue. Ah, those strokes are very independent. For the Gaussian fixed point, this would be this surface, you see? This surface. Because these are the two unstable directions, this one and this one. This one is attractive. So here, in three dimensions, this unstable surface is two dimensions. Now, for this fixed point, you have just one unstable direction. Okay. So basically, the picture shows you. So I'm not, writing any specific equation, but the equations are there, contained there. So you see that the quantum field theory has as many parameters as there are unstable direction near the fixed point. Okay, and now what is the connection? Can you state a connection between what we called renormalized parameter in the Wilsonian approach and renormalized parameter in the quantum field theory approach?
In the quantum field theory, you construct, you are interested only in what's happening in the unstable direction of a fixed point. And in the unstable direction of the fixed point, you can just change what you call parameter, change system of coordinates. Because in fact, the theory is defined by some parameter. Here we started from the parameter of the Bayer theory, but you have so you are free to choose, you know, any system of coordinates, any coordinates system or parametrization of the theory. So the renormalized parameter, let me write this briefly here. The renormalized parameter of the QFT, they are just an adequate set of coordinates in the unstable surface. The unstable surface, in fact, labels the different quantum field theory you can construct by renormalization. And this set of quantum field theory depends only on a finite set of parameters, which are going to be the parameters, the mass coupling constant of the theory. And since it's natural to, we are interested in what's happening at the scale very large, well, very small compared to the cutoff, we are just there on this blue surface. Therefore, you can choose as coordinate, as renormalized parameter, for instance, for phi 4, this coupling and this coupling, instead of this coupling and this coupling. You redefine, basically, you redefine the renormalized mass as this. You are free to do that. And in that case, well, it's starting to be a bit messy, but in this picture, let me erase this. The renormalization group flow. So these are the Bayer flow, the renormalization group flow. So you just change of coordinates. So G is still this, but so this is G renormalized, and this is T renormalized, which is going to be the physical mass of the theory. And I've just make a change of coordinates. So I have new flow, and the flow are like this. Okay. But so going from Bayer theory, going from Bayer to GR is just a change of coordinate in the systems. So you can define the flow in the new. These are flow equations. You can just revise the flow equation in terms of the new parameter. So the flow equation, which were there, S d of ds of g equal, so g bear if you want, equal w of g bear. You make the change of coordinates, it becomes S d over ds of g renormalized equals some new function, but it's just made by a change of variable, so it's easy to compute, some function of the renormalized coupling. Okay. Well, it turns out that you can check that the function, the same renormalization group flow equation expressed in terms of the renormalized coupling, and we now have just a finite number of them. So it's a finite set of equations. So here we have infinite. And here we had a finite set. Well, you can call them W renormalized, but in fact, they correspond in the language of quantum field theory into what is denoted the Kalman-Simoncic, Gell-Mann-Lau Kalman-Simoncic beta function. So the basic relation you have to remember if you want to understand the connection between Wilsonian renormalization group calculation and perturbation theory, well, renormalization theory in perturbation theory, it's just that the Wilsonian, the J-Bear, so this is Wilsonian, Wilson flow quotient are just the beta function No. Semantic beta functions, which by historical reason I called beta functions because it's one of the first examples of renormalization group equations, relevant renormalization group function for the coupling constant has been denoted beta. There was alpha, beta, gamma, etc. So this is a standard denomination that in general, when one deals with a quantum field theory, so continuum field theory, the renormalization group flow equation are just called beta. And the relation between what you call beta in quantum field theory and Wilsonian flow equations that I denote here W for W is that the opposite. And that's the opposite because in Wilsonian normalization group, you go from small scales to large scale, while in quantum field theory, you want to go from large scales to small. Well, no, you go from small scales to large scales, where in high energy physics, you are more interested in going from small energies to high energies. So you run in the opposite way, the renormalization group flow.
Shouldn't the W be the one for the renormalized?
Pardon? It's just this changing of definition. Instead of taking, of considering this, the line, those, this is a coordinate system. The basic coordinate system is here, T bar equals zero, and this is G bar equals zero, and here, this is the axis of GR normalized is T renormalized equals zero. And this axis is GR. So I've just made a change of variable that instead of T renormalized is T bare plus G.
You know? What I'm saying is that once you change the coordinate system, then the W thing will also change.
Of course, because this is a flow equation.
Yeah.
So you just you see this is a flow equation. The flow equation has to be the same. So you make a change of variables.
But in that expression, when you write the flow evaluated for the layer.
Yeah, that's this is not equal. That's you go from the W, you write the W by the change of variables, and you get minus beta. Okay. Yeah. So that's you go from there up to there. That's I'm sorry, I was a bit too short. So that's the philosophy I wanted to, the general picture I wanted to show you. And well, you can do that in the D equal four, and you see in the D equal four, you still have a problem because you have only one fixed point with one unstable direction. So although in perturbation theory, you can define the renormalized perturbation theory, when you study it at the non-perturbative level, you run into inconsistency. I still have 10 minutes and we started about 5 minutes late. So let me just explain to you, the final results for the 5-4 theory. So for the 5-4 quantum field theory, so using this way of calculating and then restricting on the attractive, on the surface which defines a field theory. In fact, you end up with doing in a different way the perturbative calculation of a normalization group for the 5-4-3. You have to have studied at one loop in QFT1, I presume, or QFT2 for QED, because you have seen that this this local potential approximation at one loop is just a way to deal with all the one loop diagram of the theory at once. Mm-hmm. So basically what we get is the same thing in perturbation theory. in my notes, this is detailed, but this is not come out of a surprise. So basically, what you find is the beta functions of the 5-4 series for the renormalized coupling is epsilon. So it's d minus 4. I'm sorry, it's 4 minus d in d dimension g renormalized, and then you get a plus sign. No, it's minus. I'm sorry, it's a minus because for W there is a 4 minus d because it's repulsive, so it's a minus for the beta function, and plus, and you get a 3 over I think 4 pi. By 4, something like that, I don't remember, g renormalized squared. So this is the canonical dimension of the coupling dim constant, and this is the result of the one loop calculation. This is the counter term which is given by this famous Avergent diagram, you see. And if you see at in terms of renormalized coupling, how this beta function behaves, well, it behaves like that. If you are in D less than 4, and it behaves like that. If you are in D equal 4. Okay. And if you are now interested in the you know, the flow when you go from the short distance to large distance, so the Wilsonian flow are like that. In D equal less than 4, this is this, and this is this. Okay. And therefore, it means that as a function of the you can see how now how S d over ds of gr of s behaves, and remember this is minus beta gr of s, and of course here I have written here only the beta function for the 5-4 coupling. Okay. So s is a scale parameter, so this tells you that for the 5-4 theory, if you are in a dimension of spacetime less than 4, you flow to the fixed point. So you have a non-trivial theory at high energy. And here, of course, since I consider that I'm along these lines, the mass, this is renormalization of 4 for the massless theory. Okay. So this is the way. So you see that here you flow toward a free theory in D equal 4 in the infrared. Infrared means large distance. Where here you flow towards a non-trivial interacting field theory in the infrared. Okay. Okay. So free theory at 4 dimensions is just means that it's the free theory you have been studying in canonical quantization before introducing interaction, and the one I've been studying before in my course. So it's just the theory whose action is just d phi squared. So it's a nice theory, but it's a very stupid theory of massless bosons which are not interacting. Okay, this one is interacting. So it's a non-trivial field theory. And if it's massless, it has no parameter. It's uniquely determined for a fixed dimension. So it turns out that this field theory is what is called the Ising fixed point QFT. If you consider the 5-4 theory, it's a theory which is used to describe the Ising model. So it's the Ising quantum field theory, and the Ising quantum field theory associated to the Wilson-Fisher fixed point is an interesting massless, therefore scale invariant theory in two and three dimensions. And if you are interested in this theory, so one way to do that is to follow the course on quantum field theory and strings, because in two dimensions, a lot is known since several decades by method of conformal field theories in two dimensions. One can compute the scalic dimension of the field, the critical exponent, some correlation functions. In fact, in two dimensions, by a trick that goes back to Onsager solutions of the Ising model, it's in fact a model of free fermions. But the way you construct the physical theory of the 5-4 theory out of the free fermions means that it's a non-trivial theory, but in terms of some of its degrees of freedom, it's a massless, it's a non-interacting theory. Interactions are mediated by the statistics, and in D equal 3, it's a non-trivial theory, and there has been recently, well, let's say since 10 years or maybe 15 years, very important progress in understanding this non-trivial interacting quantum theory in three dimensions by method of conformal field theory and conformal, what's called conformal bootstraps. More. Bootstrap methods. Okay, but I'm not. Okay. And let me finish by stating that if everything is fine here and here, when you go to the infrared, in the ultraviolet limit, when you go to high energies, I draw in violet the infrared limit, but I don't know. So the ultraviolet means going in the other way. You see, in the ultraviolet limit, 5-4 theory in less than four dimensions becomes a non-interacting theory. D equal 4 becomes a non-interacting. Sorry. So the theory is said ultraviolet free. Okay, but in D equal 4, you run into a problem. Because in D equal 4, you see that the romanization group flow at high energy goes to infinity. Okay. It's strongly interacting. And it's more than that, because if you integrate, imagine that you are interested in this theory for high energy. You are interested, what is the effective coupling constant as a function of the energy of your system by the same argument. So this is just a scaling difference. So you can write a renormalization group equation by stating that this is given by the beta functions, that's plus the beta functions of G effective of E. And in four dimensions, this is plus G effective of E squared. So you integrate this equation. That's a very simple equation to integrate. And you get that G effective of E, well, there is some coefficient, but the important fact is that the sign is positive. And you get that G effective of E is G effective of E divided by, so it starts as G effective, but then you get something which is 1, and you get minus G effective log of the energy. Well, you have to compare the energy to the energy scale you start from. So there is some coefficient here. And you see that there is a pole at energy such that the energy is mu times exponential 1 over g, the original theory you started from. So this is a g effective. This is the original theory, the original coupling, and that's it. You get a singularity. G effective becomes infinite because you have a pole in the theory. So that's a phenomenon that has been discovered, in fact, by Landau in QED, in quantum electrodynamics, which has also a beta function which is positive. And this phenomenon is called the appearance of a Landau ghost. Because if you want to try to define the theory for G, for energy larger than this coupling, you discover some problem unitarities. So you have, in fact, a theory which is ultraviolet. In the ultraviolet, she's so strongly interacting that it becomes inconsistent for energies beyond that is critical energy, which appears in some calculation of a two-point function as a ghost, namely a pole with a negative residue. So it's a pole, but the pole is not associated to particles, but the particle with you know, scalar products is negative. Okay. So, okay, so I end up here, but I hope I've given you a general picture of the connection between randomization group. What is the philosophy of randomization group calculation in statistical mechanics? So using the Wilsonian or the Wilson-Polchinski point of view, if you do it more cleanly in a QFT framework, and the setup you have been studied. So this stayed very qualitative in this presentation. I have no time to make calculation, but if you do the calculation more precisely, you can follow these steps by steps, made this calculation of the flow, redefining the relation between bare couplings and renormalized coupling, and you see that everything is consistent. Okay. So let me end here for today, since I'm a bit late. And tomorrow I'm going to discuss some aspects of renormalization of gauge series, non-abelian gauge series, and non-abelian gauge series, as you probably already know from the course on strong interaction, and all the courses do not suffer from this theory in the high energy ultraviolet sectors, because the beta function for non-abelian gauge series is negative instead of being positive. And so, which means that the physics at high energy is simple. The theory is almost free. That's called asymptotic freedom. And the theory at small distance is very complicated, highly non-perturbative, but very interesting because it's the dynamics of gauge series contains a lot of physical important and non-perturbative phenomenon. Well, of course, first confinement and then lots of associated non-perturbative phenomena. Okay, so I'm trying to deal with that quickly tomorrow. Okay, thank you.